And go. Welcome back to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast from the American College of Gastroenterology. I'm Vladimir Kushner, the chair of the ACG Innovation and Technology Committee. Today, we're excited to welcome Dr. Raj Kaswani to the podcast. Dr. Kaswani is a good friend and gastroenterologist who is nationally renowned in interventional endoscopy and leads efforts to improve quality of healthcare delivery in gastroenterology. He currently serves as Assistant Director of Endoscopy for Northwestern Medicine and Director of Quality for Northwestern Medicine Digestive Health Institute. In this conversation, Dr. Kaswani walks us through how practicing gastroenterologists should approach implementing computer-aided polyp detection, or CAD-E. We talk about measuring the specific impact of artificial intelligence on quality, suggestion on obtaining buy-in among our peers and leadership, and how to approach CAD-E as the standard of care, even without specific billing codes. We're also grateful that Dr. Kaswani discusses some of the challenges in the space, including long lead time between implementation and results, as well as the possibility of AI helping us merely identify diminutive polyps or incidental omas. We hope you enjoy it.
Dr. Kaswani, thank you again for joining us and for sharing your expertise. I want to start by asking you if you can explain how AI technologies are being integrated into colonoscopy procedures today.
It's a great question, and it's in some ways a loaded question because you added the word at the end, today, and then you need to think about, are you saying today in the United States or outside the United States? I think all of us know that AI is being utilized widely, you know, around the world now for what we commonly call CAD-E, computer-aided detection, which is the ability of AI to real-time identify polyps during colonoscopy. In the pipeline are numerous things that AI can do, may do in the future, but some of them are available in other countries. Some of them are sort of not yet approved for commercial use. But that's really, you know, spans the gamut of things we can do with AI. But again, in this day and age, most of us, when we think of AI and endoscopy, when we're thinking about that, we're thinking about computer-aided detection.
Okay. And computer-aided detection of polyps, can you tell us, like, what's the significant improvement with adding this computer-aided detection for patients as a result?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my area of interest in this always came about because, you know, we know that people, despite their best efforts, are not perfect at endoscopy. We all want to think we're perfect, but we have either blind spots, things that we don't recognize because we haven't been trained to recognize them, or just, you know, we don't see it on the screen that day. There's a reason why we have that variation, and the benefit of CAD-E is that it can reduce that variation in quality. And so that's been a real sort of bonus. And we've seen that in studies, both at our institution and many other studies, that when you implement CAD-E into your institution, you can significantly improve the rate of adenoma detection and serrated polyp detection. And you know, the magnitude of improvement varies based on the study, but to my eyes, the impact is, you know, so undeniable at this point.
Now, Raj, I have one follow-up question on that. Do you think that impact will translate into improved patient outcomes, or are we finding more diminutive polyps that are incidental omas, for lack of a better term, that likely would never have progressed to a full-blown malignancy? So, you know, put it in another way, how many quality adjusted life years, what's the cost per quality adjusted life year saved using CAD-E right now or even in years?
Yeah, tough question, Vlad. You sort of started quite quickly with the sort of hard hitting question that I would say is unknown. I'm going to, you know, recite what you both already know. We know that the people who find the, as you had to call it, incidental omas, but I'd call it diminutive polyps, diminutive adenomas, the people who find those more frequently are also more likely to find the advanced adenomas, and they're more likely to have their patients avoid colorectal cancer. The question is, does AI, which by up till now mostly helps us find these polyps less than a centimeter, is that going to translate into a reduction in colorectal cancer and even more importantly, colorectal cancer mortality? Those studies are ongoing, as you can imagine. They're really hard to do and they will take years to show a benefit. I can only go based on the fact that, you know, most of our efforts in gastroenterology has been focused on getting people to care about the little polyps, because when you get them to care about the little polyps, they tend to find the bigger ones also. And we expect a mortality reduction. And the only other thing I would add is that if you're finding more diminutive polyps, you're more likely to bring this patient back earlier for a surveillance exam. And that may be better identifying the low versus high risk patient. The patient who has no diminutive polyps at all, no polyps at all during a screening colonoscopy with AI, is probably an exceedingly low risk for colorectal cancer. And so you're really sort of separating the two groups of people who are at risk versus not at risk a little bit better with AI.
So I have a question, since you said the studies are being done now, you know, with AI technology, and since it changes fast and the algorithms adapt fast, do you think it is feasible and reasonable to do these studies that could take 5 or 10 years to show an outcome while the technology is changing?
Yeah, such a good question. And I guess the first part of the question is we put AI in quotes, but already, you know, there's multiple different platforms for AI, both available in the United States and available elsewhere. And so if you're just testing one AI platform, does that hold true for every one of them? They're all trained on different polyps to develop their algorithms. Some may be better at finding flat polyps than others. Some may be better at finding serrated polyps than others. So that's a challenge. And as you sort of are predicting through your question, if the study ends up being negative, the answer will be, well, we've trained it better now. I think most of us really strongly believe that with a properly constructed algorithm, knowing that people miss polyps, that AI is going to help us reduce colorectal cancer mortality. Sort of as a bit of an aside, you know, we did a study in trainees looking at what kind of polyps trainees miss during tandem colonoscopy. So what we do is that we'd have the trainee look at the right colon, and then me or another, you know, high volume, high quality endoscopist would do a second look at the right colon. And there were times that the trainees were staring with the polyp in their screen at 15 millimeter polyps, not recognizing that this was an advanced lesion that they need to identify and remove. Clearly, AI would have clued them in that there's a suspicious polyp there. I mean, we actually ran AI algorithms on those videos where they had missed these large polyps, and AI obviously marked them as important polyps. So at least for a subset of our colonoscopists, AI is going to help us identify those suspicious lesions. But as you suggested, if AI is not positive in the study where it can actually reduce colorectal cancer development, is it a fault of the concept of AI or the actual execution of AI? I would argue that it's the execution.
So that's a great transition to, you know, the next set of questions we have, and it has to do with the execution. For what does AI mean for the proceduralist? You know, how do you execute it? Does it increase procedure time? Does it take time to train on? You know, walk us through implementation, you know, the way you did it in your organization with so many physicians, and how was that like?
Yeah, it's an important question, because I think when you think about technology, you want to make sure it's not burdensome. And, you know, stepping back, all of us care a lot about one goal: preventing people from developing colorectal cancer and dying from colorectal cancer. So if I implement technology that helps my single patient reduce colorectal cancer risk, but at adding 10 minutes to my procedure, I'm essentially providing less care to more patients around, you know, in my community. And if you add that up, it just means less people getting to colonoscopy during a year and less people being saved from colorectal cancer. So my small improvement for my single patient, if it costs me a lot additional time in the population health level, ends up ruining everything. We're thankful to see that in most people's studies, when they implemented CADe, it doesn't actually increase procedure time very much or not at all. So maybe a minute at most. And a lot of that gets a little confusing, is depending on the study. Is that additional time because you're removing additional polyps, or is it just because you're spending a little more time looking? But from a financial perspective, you know, when you think about the amount of time you're spending on a procedure, and is it you're sort of getting the benefit back from, as Vlad alluded to earlier, this, you know, quality adjusted life years, this idea that are we really making that that benefit? The minimal increase in time is not what's going to be a detractor from AI being implemented.
So you mentioned from the financial standpoint, can you tell us how is it, what's the impact on the finances of the hospital, for example? And
yeah, it's a good question. And I would love to sort of hear your all thoughts on this as well, because these financial part of the colonoscopy is not an easy question at all, right? So let's just go through it for our discussion point, right? There's the physician billing part, right? So what are we going to get for this procedure? There is the hospital billing or ASC, what they're going to get for a facility fee. Then there is pathology, which may be within my control if I'm one of these medical groups versus, you know, within the hospital's, you know, financial sort of portfolio. And then there's obviously things like supplies and things like that. And we talked about time, right? If it takes too much time, you're getting a small X amount of extra money for time. Is it worth it? I can just tell you what, you know, we've seen from our work as well as from the literature. And then I sort of want to see what you think as well. It's clear that AI helps you find more polyps. So on the whole, because you turn more screening colonoscopies into screening without any polyps to screening colonoscopies with polypectomy, that you're going to make a little bit more on that physician billing, right? Because you're basically taking out more polyps, not the number of polyps, but turning more normal colonoscopies into polypectomy colonoscopies. That goes up. And then obviously that has implications on facility fee as well. That also increases your pathology reimbursement. And that's probably one of the bigger things, that you're increasing the number of jars, which, as we know, that increases the billing, as well as, again, pathology for cases that might not have had a pathology before because you're finding more polyps. If you're sharing in that revenue, that's obviously makes it even easier to implement AI. And, you know, I think the negligible thing about supplies and all that, it really doesn't factor in too much. From our perspective, even just the facility fee and the physician billing, generally, if you really have a market increase in your adenoma detection rate, really does, you know, mostly pay for technology. If you can get some of that revenue from the pathology, increased pathology, it's a no-brainer as well. So what do you all think? You've thought about this, obviously, from your own institutions. Do you think it sort of fits that way, where it's sort of financially pays for itself?
I mean, just speaking for my health system, you know, where I work, the question is still outstanding because we're still fairly early in the adoption phase. I think we're about 18 months in. And just looking at revenue cycles, it takes a little bit of time to trickle down. You know, the kind of other part, as you mentioned earlier, is converting screening procedures into diagnostic procedures, or taking somebody from a 7-year surveillance interval to a 3-year surveillance interval. That, you know, increased financial incentive, you know, is obviously something that you have to have a lot of patience to realize. So I think long term, as you mentioned, it does make sense. The math adds up. But you do have to have a little bit of a longer time horizon than most physicians have when they're doing colonoscopies.
That's a great point. I think I just want to emphasize that point you made, because I should have said that as part of our discussion, which is, like you said, if you're not in a place where volume is not, you know, overwhelming, changing a patient from a 10-year to a 7-year surveillance examination, 10-year screening examination to a 7-year surveillance examination is, you know, increased revenue for your ASC or hospital. And I, you know, I want to caution, I think all of us are in alignment here. Our goal is not to increase revenue, right? I mean, that's part of the idea of keeping the lights on. But if you can improve quality without incurring a negative cost burden, that makes improving quality a no-brainer. And from our from our calculations, it was pretty clear that we actually were able to do it in our pragmatic trial of actually looking at patients who had AI versus those who didn't have AI. The billing just went up when AI was present compared to when it wasn't. So I think you'll see the same, Vlad, in your institution. We didn't take such a long timeline. The numbers may be slower to calculate in St. Louis than Chicago, but we were able to sort of show that relatively easily.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I haven't analyzed our data here to see if there's any change in the billing. So that'll be very interesting for me to look into. I'll get back to you on it. It's not hard to do.
Yep. We'll do it on episode 2.
Yeah. So the question on the billing becomes, do you envision, you talked about physician fee, facility fee. Do you envision having a fee specifically or a code for AI in colonoscopy?
I am definitely a skeptic that will happen. I think that would. I'm a person who's more in the AI space because I'm interested in that. As I said, endoscopy quality space. And then I start to think about the same way I think about all the other stuff we do to improve endoscopy quality. All of us on this conversation are old enough to know about the adoption of high definition white light, right? As an option. It's to me, this is another concept like that. We're basically investing in technology that helps us get better. We can't take it as a financial hit, but insurance companies weren't going to pay money to see for those who were going to use high definition white light scopes compared to the standard definition before that were, even though there was a significant improvement in quality of colonoscopy. Sure, there are times, and I'm sort of being a little bit pessimistic about it. There's obviously devices that you can get paid for and things of that sort. But I'm just starting to sense that AI is going to be so intrinsic to the performance of colonoscopy that it's sort of overwhelming. This is what we do. That it's not paid for. It's just expected as what you do as a high quality colonoscopist. I would like to be wrong because I think that would accelerate adoption if AI was paid for. But I'm too pessimistic to think that. But again, you can convince me otherwise.
No, so actually, for our listeners, you went through that process and made the case. And this episode really focuses on the finances of AI, especially in colonoscopy. Can you describe the process you went through with administration to say, hey, we want to bring this on so our listeners can kind of have a guideline? What are the leaders like you who have successfully implemented it and looked at the quality? How do they approach that?
Yeah, I think the benefit we have is, we did our own internal evaluation. So we probably like many of our listeners here, we were pretty confident that we were doing a great job, and we were, right? Our baseline adenoma detection rate was very high as an institution, and it wasn't clear to me that AI was going to make a massive difference in performance, right? I suspected that we would, not see an impact because we were already doing so well. So we did do our internal sort of evaluation, as I sort of alluded to, which was, essentially like many other people have done. It's not a novel technique, which is one day a colonoscopist has access to AI and one day they don't, right? So everyone serves as their own internal controls, but not only were we trying to figure out did ADR improve, and of course it did, right? The ADR overall, went up about 5% and serrated detection went up about 3%. We also assessed, were people using it? Because that's very important for people who are going to pay the big bucks to bring it into the institution. We found actually only about half the people were consistently using it. But of the people who were using it, their ADR actually went up about 8%, right? So when you actually use it, things went up a lot. So we first showed that it improved quality. We showed that about half the endoscopists used it, but then we actually asked, if we adopted this, would you use it, right? So we also wanted to get, make sure that the administration understood that there's buy-in. And about 3/4 of endoscopists said if CADI was available, they would use it in the majority of cases. Again, made that, that that case to the administration that this is something that the endoscopists want. And then we looked at the financials. And what we did is just what we alluded to. We sort of got the amount of money that went up when AI was used in terms of billing, as well as we looked at the pathology revenue. And obviously, I can't get into the specific numbers because some of it's sort of internal numbers. But suffice it to say that it was going to very easily pay for itself. So what you need to do if you're going to do this at your institution is really look at, you know, what is your mean collections for a normal screening colonoscopy or surveillance colonoscopy? And what is that when you actually turn that procedure into a colonoscopy with a polypectomy? And we looked at that per case. So let's just say that I get paid $30 more per colonoscopy when it goes from a normal colonoscopy to a colonoscopy polypectomy. Then I'm able to multiply that number out by the number of normal colonoscopies that turn to colonoscopy polypectomy, and relatively quickly on the back of a napkin figure out what my increased reimbursement might be for that. Pathology is a little bit more of a black box, but you can look at that as well. The key part here is that you need to tell, you can't put this as a cost ideally to your section. Like, this isn't just going to help gastroenterology. This is really something that you want the hospital system, if you're a part of a hospital, to look at more holistically and say, maybe this should be paid for out of a different revenue stream because it's going to increase pathology collections so much. And so all we had to do is make the case that A, we're improving quality, B, physicians want it, and C, it's going to pay for itself. And then we were able to make that case. And you know, it sounds easy now, but then it becomes a bit of a no-brainer, right? Why would you not improve quality while not losing money?
Yeah, and that's a very nice roadmap for people who want to take on, you know, that challenge. In the ideal world, you know, money would not play into any of this. Unfortunately, money has, at the end of the day, you have to convince your administration that, as you said, you're increasing quality and improving billing at the same time, which is great if this technology is doing both. Neil, one more question I have for you. How long you've had now, you know, CADI at your institution?
Yeah, we started the sort of the trial of adoption in early 2022. And it was 2023, you know, beginning of 2023, where we decided to implement it, not just at our hospital, but we are part of a large healthcare system, like many of you all are as well. So we have multiple hospitals and multiple endoscopy centers, endoscopy sites and locations under our umbrella. And I would say the forward-thinking thing that, you know, really occurred is once we showed it worked at our academic hospital, administration said it's not just, it shouldn't just happen at the academic hospital. It should be present in every single location within the entire Northwestern medicine enterprise. So that's every single endoscopy room, you know, from our rural hospital up to our suburban hospitals. All of them got adoption of CADI at the same time. And again, that's just sort of the idea that, listen, this is now the standard of care. We've showed it makes it better. We showed endoscopists want it. This is now the standard of care if you're going to get a colonoscopy at our healthcare system.
And have you noticed any change in the attitude? I mean, you've had it for 2 years towards it. Like you said at the beginning, only 50% of people were using it. Did really 3/4 of people end up using it? Is it 100%? Is it now part of the workflow?
Yeah, this is the big fear for those of us, like, you know, all of us on this conversation who are partly in charge of purchasing, that you don't want to buy this expensive thing and then have it just sit on the ground and never be turned on. One, we showed the people who didn't use it that, you know, for the people who used it, their respected peers, they improved their quality. And so I think that was a little bit of like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have been so resistant to its use. Number two is we made it just at the start of the day, just like you know, fill your water bottle for your colonoscopy and you know, you set up your scope, you turn on AI, which works really well because it's on and you have to actively turn it off if you're someone who's such a non-believer. As far as we can tell, everyone has been a ready adopter of it. There's always people who might be true contrarians, but I would say that over time, it has gotten increasing adoption. And I've likened it to some people who, obviously all of us use carbon dioxide for all of our endoscopy. It wasn't like that all the time. There were people who were obsessed with still using air, and they were trying to resist, and I'm going to use air for my procedure. I mean, air makes no sense, but eventually everyone sort of migrates to what is the standard of care. And everyone has slowly migrated, some slower than others, but everyone is sort of there right now.
And Raj, last question. What advice would you have for a health system or a physician practice who want to implement a computer-aided detection in their practice? What are the first steps? What are the subsequent steps? And what do you need to kind of say to sell this to your partners?
Yeah, it becomes a more complicated question actually now, Vlad, than it was when I sort of looked at it initially, because there's more choices now. There's one obviously dominant choice that we all know, but there are more choices, and we all believe that, and we know that AI will be part of processors soon that are, you know, part of the QuantaScope processors. And so the question now is, you know, which technology you want to choose, to me, not do you want to adopt the technology? I don't think every single place needs to do their own internal assessment anymore. I think you just need to say the evidence is overwhelming. This is getting close to being the standard of care. Which platform do we want to choose? And then it's similar to like how you and I try to decide, you know, which stent do we want to use or which snare do we want to use, right? So when the three of us are making decisions, it's not, should we use a snare, right? It's which one should we use? And it's going to be like that for AI, I think. You know, which one are we going to use? And that's going to be a bit of a financial consideration, right? Which one, you know, what? Looking at that perspective, will be, you know, we need to go going forward.
Well, this was a really nice conversation and comprehensive. Thank you, Dr. Keswani, for sharing your experience, your expertise, and your opinion on this. This is definitely something that everyone is interested and excited about and a part of our future.
All right. I appreciate you having me, and it was a lot of fun. We'll do it again sometime.
Thank you for listening to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe and drop us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also send us questions and ideas for future episodes to brainsandguts@gi.org. We look forward to talking to you soon.